He was seen as a hero of the Rwandan genocide, but Paul Rusesabagina will now spend the next 25 years in jail for terrorism. What led to the verdict, and did his criticism of the president play a role? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. For many, Paul Rusesabagina is a hero. The former hotel manager saved the lives of more than 1,200 people by giving them shelter during the 1994 Rwandan genocide. The story was celebrated in the Hollywood film Hotel Rwanda. Since then, Rusesabagina has become one of the most vocal critics of President Paul Kagame. The government has accused him of being part of an armed group. He's been convicted and jailed for 25 years for terrorism. Rights groups and observers say the trial was a sham designed to send a message to dissidents. Malcolm Webb reports from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
Paul Rusesabagina refused to come to court with his co-accused to hear the verdict of his trial in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. He was charged with terrorism and related offences. Prosecutors said he was behind a series of attacks that happened in Rwanda 3 years ago.
With regard to Rusesabagina, Paul, he is convicted of being a member of an illegal group and participating in terror activities, but he is acquitted of creating an illegal armed group. Therefore, Rusesabagina Paul is sentenced to 25 years imprisonment.
Rusesabagina was flown from Dubai to Kigali last year against his will. Rwanda's government suggested he was deceived into boarding a plane that it paid for. International legal observers say that was just the first of many problems with the trial. His family has rejected the verdict.
My father was tortured, kidnapped, denied his basic rights, and then now they just gave him a guilty verdict. The co-accused came on the stand and said that they had been forced and coerced and tortured into saying false things against my father, and the witnesses are paid a government agents.
Rusesabagina was made famous by the Hollywood film Hotel Rwanda. It told the story of how he saved hundreds of lives as a hotel manager during Rwanda's 1994 genocide. He then fled into exile and became a vocal critic of Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame. He pledged support for an opposition armed group. Prosecutors said he also funded it and ordered attacks. Rusesabagina denied it. Most of his co-accused pled guilty, and their statements were used as evidence against him.
The other defendants are now being led onto the prison bus to be taken back to jail. But Rusesabagina hasn't even left jail for the last 6 months because he's refused to participate in the court proceedings. All of the defendants now have the opportunity to appeal at the Court of Appeal within the next 15 days. Rusesabagina and his supporters have completely rejected all of these legal proceedings to date.
Rusesabagina is a Belgian citizen and a resident of the US. Both governments have criticised the trial. Rwanda's government says justice has been delivered. If he serves the 25-year sentence, Rusesabagina, who's 67 years old, will likely die in jail. Malcolm Webb, Al Jazeera, Kigali, Rwanda.
President Paul Kagame is a polarising figure in Rwanda. He's credited with developing the country and its political stability after the genocide. But he's accused of silencing opponents. South Africa's investigators said Kagame's government was directly involved in the killing of one of his critics, Patrick Karegeya, in Johannesburg in 2014. Kigali has denied the accusations and any involvement in the unsolved murders of several Rwandan dissidents. Now, the most recent was the death of a former army officer who was shot at his home in Mozambique's capital, Maputo, last week. Let's bring in our guests. In Kigali, Yolande Makolo, a Rwandan government spokesperson, and in Chicago, Brian Endless, Director of African Studies at Loyola University Chicago and Senior Advisor to the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation. And in London, Jonathan Ofey-Ansah, publisher of Africa Briefing, a Pan-African news magazine based in London. Now, welcome to the programme. I'd like to begin with Brian Endless in Chicago. This was nothing more than a sham trial.
Thank you for having me on the program. And unfortunately, I completely agree. Paul Rusesabagina was kidnapped by the Rwandan government over a year ago, last August. He was not kidnapped because of any criminal charges. He was taken because he has been a critic of that government for over 20 years now, and they have harassed him over that time. A European parliamentarian said, "What fair trial process starts with a kidnapping?" And following the kidnapping, he was tortured for 4 days. He was held in solitary confinement for over 250 days in violation of the UN's Nelson Mandela rules for treatment of prisoners. And he has had limited or no access to his lawyers or legal documents. There was no fair trial ever intended in this case. And as we clearly see from the proceedings and from the results, no fair trial happened.
In Kigali, Yolande Makolo, this was just justice being served, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The trial of these 21 FLN suspects was conducted fairly and transparently, and the evidence that was presented to the court was compelling and comprehensive. Part of the evidence that was presented to the court consisted of files that were handed over to the Rwandan prosecution from the Belgian prosecution that searched Rusesabagina's house in Brussels. Presented in court was the testimony of his co-accused, who talked about what they had done together, as well as victim testimonies, victims of the attacks in 2018 and 2019 in southwestern Rwanda.
Brian Endless, it was fair, it was transparent, the evidence was presented in the way it should have been. Why are you complaining?
Let me take it point by point, and thank you for bringing it up. And that is the classic answer of the Rwandan government. The good news for us was it was transparent. This trial was very transparent. It was broadcast on YouTube every day, and we were able to watch it with Paul's family and Paul's legal team, and we saw the unfairness unfold before our eyes. There was no compelling testimony. In fact, there was no reasonable testimony in any way, shape, or form. There was nothing presented that showed that Paul or any of the co-accused were guilty. The spokesperson mentioned the so-called Belgian dossier. There was, in fact, a dossier that came from Belgium. It was an investigation that started at the request of the Rwandan government in 2019. The Belgian government cooperated with them. They put together a long document. Unfortunately for the Rwandan government, they want us to believe this document is in some way going to indict Paul. In fact, we've read the document, and there is nothing in it. There is nothing to the point that in July, the Belgian government began talking with Paul's local lawyer to tell him that they were about to close the case and nothing was going to happen. There was no evidence found there that in any way could be used to indict Paul. The testimony of the co-accused, and there was actually a written testimony from Paul too. Paul began this in person after person, talked about their testimony when they came up on the stand, and they said it was coerced. In Paul's case, it was coerced at the end of 4 days of torture with no lawyer present. He was forced to sign a document. At least one of the co-accused said in court that he signed a document he had not even read. His lawyer presented him with the document. Most of the co-accused talked about the coercion that went into their written testimony, and their verbal testimony, on the other hand, in open court, transparently, completely vindicated Paul and the others. They said there was no connection to Paul. They didn't know him. They didn't know of the political party that Paul is a part of until they went to jail. And then finally, because the spokesperson brought it up, the victim's testimony was not testimony at all. We watched victim after victim, and I'm very sorry for these victims and their families. We watched victim after victim come up, and they told us what they had lost. They gave us a story of troops that were unidentified that had attacked them and or attacked their loved ones. They told us what property they had lost or the injuries they had had. They never identified these troops. They never identified any of the co-accused. They never said that any of these troops were a part of the group that the Rwandan government alleges committed these attacks. In fact, over the entire trial from February to July, zero evidence was presented that these attacks even happened. There were pictures of some attack. There were witnesses talking about some attack. It was only the prosecutors telling us these attacks happened. They
presented
Brian, no
Brian,
proof.
Let's put all of that to Yolanda McCullough. What is your reaction?
Well, in addition to numerous records of WhatsApp conversation between the members who are planning the attacks in Rwanda and also planning how to take responsibility for them, there was evidence of Western Union, another institution, for funds to the DRC to buy weapons and supplies. There were conversations about the needs of the soldiers on the ground. There were conversations as well about Rusesa Bagina getting military updates from the ground, from the commanders in the ground. He was clearly in charge of this militia. He was promoting the officers. He was deciding who the spokespeople would be. In addition, while all of this was happening, they were not quiet about this. They're still online on VOA and BBC radio, conversations that Rusesa Bagina had with journalists, bragging about the attacks and taking responsibility for
having a conversation with a journalist is not a crime. That is not a crime. That is not a crime. Having a conversation with a journalist is not a crime. Having a conversation on WhatsApp privately is not evidence of conspiracy.
Taking responsibility for attacks where people died is a crime. And he was found guilty based on the evidence that was presented in court.
Jonathan, a fair answer. You've been hearing what our two guests in Kigali and Chicago have been saying. Clearly, this is a very controversial trial with very controversial themes, like having conversations with journalists. I mean, how much of the African imagination has this caught?
Well, the trial has been controversial indeed, yes. But from where I'm sitting as an observer, a journalist and an observer, I believe that Paul Rusesa Bagina, you know, is on record. You know, we all saw it on TV. Al Jazeera broadcast it on TV. That the Kagame regime must be removed by all means necessary. Okay, I mean, so he set himself up openly as an opponent of Paul Kagame. Okay, and from what we gather, report that we gather, I mean, there were some bombings, you know, in certain villages, which he was implicated. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a legal expert, I'm just a journalist observing things. And from what we see, I could neither agree that the trial was free and fair or the trial was unfair. Okay, but
sorry, Jonathan, you're cracking up there. We're going to come back to you shortly, but I do want to put your point to Yolanda McCullough. This has been a trial that has been watched by international observers. It was very important for Rwanda to get this right and to be completely transparent. Yet, you've been criticised by the Belgian government. You've been criticised by human rights organisations. Is there any of those criticisms that you take on board?
Not at all. They had the concern that this trial be free and fair, and that's what we did. There's no one who's more interested in a free and fair trial than we were. This trial was long. It took 6 months. It was meticulously carried out by the judges, and the verdict that they came up with was based on the evidence that was presented, including some open sources, as our colleague in London is talking about. This video, by his own admission, Paul Rusesa Bagina was the leader of the FLN. He called on people to mobilize, to support these young men and women who are in the Nyungwe forest. And he said they wouldn't leave there. They did not enter the forest to abandon it. And they will go all the way to Kigali to overthrow a legitimately elected government. He said this.
Okay, well, let's go back to the evidence. We've seen a lot of the evidence, like the courts.
No government would tolerate terrorists.
And no government should tolerate terrorists. But that's not the question we're asking. Let me just go to Jonathan Afay's answer. It is the most crucial point of this case. A lot of it is political. This was about Rusesa Bagina saying that he was a critic of the Kagame government, and that's what put him in their sights. Now, that's maybe illegal, maybe not illegal, but it depends on the country's constitution. In Rwanda, it's clearly illegal to have that level of criticism. From where you're sitting, you're a journalist, you're sitting in London, you're critical of several regimes in Africa, including Rwanda. Do you fear that you might be in the sights of the Rwandan government, like other dissidents have been?
Sometimes I'm African, you know, I'm not even British. I've lived here more than 40 years, but I'm still African with a Ghana passport. And sometimes in my line of work, you know, I have to be careful how I report, how I analyze certain events, certain things, you know, in Africa. I mean, for fear of my own skin. So, but I will say that, look, President Kagame himself has admitted, I can't put that word, but he said the word to return that. He would try to undermine the country.
Sorry, Jonathan, it's a very important point you're making, but we don't have a clear connection to you. I'm going to go to Brian Endless. Brian, one of the themes, not just of this trial, but of Kagame's government, is that he has been cracking down on dissidents, not just Rusesa Beginner, but others as well. Do you think that's a fair criticism of him?
100%. And I've been working on issues in Rwanda since 2007. It has only gotten worse since that time. And please don't take my word for it. You mentioned international organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and others. The Clooney Foundation has done an excellent job on trial monitoring on this case. They all say this case is unfair. More importantly, though, thank you for bringing it up, Paul's case is not isolated. There have been thousands of victims over the past 10 decades. In the last 5 years alone, there are Rwandan expatriate groups that track these things. 300 people have been killed extrajudicially inside and outside of the country by the Rwandan government. Thousands more have been arrested. We have some of the high-profile cases. Kizito Mihigo was a singer who was considered a dissident, who was put in jail and then died under mysterious circumstances. Yvonne Idamage was a housewife who had enough and who began to criticize Kagame online and who was warned to stop, and when she didn't stop, she was imprisoned. Former high government officials, some of the people that I talk to on a regular basis are people who were former RPF, Kagame's party, and they were very highly placed. We know the stories of Patrick Kiragaya, his former intelligence chief, who was very close to Paul Kagame, and after they fell out, he was assassinated in South Africa. General Niamwasa, the former head of the
Brian,
military.
Let's put those points to Yolande. Yolande, why is your government locking up dissidents, according to Brian?
Listen, the evidence of Rusesa Beginner's guilt in this case is clear. If anyone has evidence to the contrary, they should bring it out. Instead, what Brian is doing and what other people like him are doing bombarding us with very tired stereotypes about Rwanda and prejudiced views of Africa in general. What is most shocking about it is the total and complete removal of victims of these crimes. No one talks about the victims. These crimes are real. They happened in 2018 and 2019. Two extremely brutal attacks took place in June and December 2018, in which 9 people were killed, including 2 children, aged 13 and 17. Families were devastated. But this is completely ignored. Their suffering is completely ignored, as is the complicity of the 20 other co-defendants, just because one of the defendants was portrayed in a film 17 years ago.
Jonathan Afe, answer in London. One of the reasons Paul Kagame is such a powerful figure in Rwanda is because of his economic reforms, because of his ability to manage the economy. A lot of Rwandans are... Sorry, we actually can't go to you right now, but we'll go back to Yolande. Yolande, I want to hear from you. Give me a clear answer. This trial was criticised by Human Rights Watch, by the Belgian government. You say it was a fair trial. Was it flawed? Can you admit that? Or do you think it was completely above board?
It was above board. It was tried as well as any case would be tried anywhere else in the world. There's nothing preventing Rusesabagina from assessing the case against him and defending himself.
Brian, what do you think?
The Rwandan justice system, absolutely ridiculous, really devastated in 1994, and we've rebuilt. It is capable, it is experienced. Countries from all over the world sent suspects and fugitives back to Rwanda to be tried, including countries in Europe.
You've got a lot of people, Yolanda, that are disagreeing with you. You've got a lot of people disagreeing with you, including our guest in Chicago, Brian Endless. Brian, tell me, Just let me ask you a question, Brian. How much of what you're criticizing the Rwandan government for is the classic criticism of African governments everywhere, is that they're incapable of being fair, just because they're African?
It's actually, for me, it's not true at all, because I've become a deep expert on Rwanda, and I know many other African countries. While there are issues in African countries, I honestly believe Paul Kagame's Rwanda is a special case. This is a man who wants complete control over dissent inside of his country. While other leaders may want it, he has actually achieved it. And examples are the things that Yolanda is bringing up are patently on their face ridiculous.
Well, our guest in London is back, Brian. I want to put that point to him as well, because we haven't really heard from him because of technical difficulties. But Jonathan Ofeanse, it's a very simple question. Paul Kagame is insulated from a lot of the criticism within Rwanda itself because he's been a success. Some people have called him a benevolent dictator. How much does that mean he's untouchable?
Nobody is untouchable, OK? But let's consider Rwanda's past recent history. They had a genocide, Hutus against Tutsis. About 800,000 people were killed. So such events actually shape people's minds, shape people's thinking, shift people's actions. Okay, so maybe that has, I'm not trying to be an apologist for Paul Kagame, but maybe that has shaped him. And in trying to prevent a similar tragedy occurring in Rwanda again. Yes, and sometimes too, I compare him to the first prime minister of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew. I mean, at independence in 1957-58, Singapore was a backwater, complete backwater. But see where Singapore is today, right? All through the effort of that benevolent dictator called Lee Kuan Yew.
Sorry, Jonathan, we have lost you. I want to leave the last point, actually, to you both in Kigali and in Chicago, very, very simply. Is there anything of each other's arguments? Chicago, Brian Endless says it's a sham. In Kigali, Yolanda, you say that this is actually a fair trial. Is there anything you've heard from each other that might change your minds? Let's begin with you, Yolanda, first.
Absolutely not. I do not understand someone who, you know, Brian Endless says that Kagame invented the genocide in which more than a million people died. Anything else he says after that makes absolutely no sense. We are very pleased.
Sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there. I do want to come to Brian as well, because I did say we would. Brian, your thoughts?
To be clear, I never said anything like that. Once again, it is made up by the Rwandan government. My base thought here is, if their system is so fair, why did they not try extradition? The United States has extradited Rwandans back. That is something I agree with Yolanda on. She mentioned that earlier. Why did they kidnap the man instead of trying extradition? Why are they holding him from his lawyers and not allowing his lawyers to see him? Why did they torture him on his arrival? None of these things suggest that there was any chance of a fair trial. A fair legal system would have put the evidence to the United States, where he was living at the time, or to Belgium, and to say, please send this man to us. And the U.S. and Belgium have cooperated with Rwanda in the past. There was never an attempt at cooperation. They jumped straight to kidnapping a humanitarian because he is a critic of a dictatorship.
I want to thank all our guests, Yolande Makolo, Brian Endless and Jonathan Offay-Anser. And I want to thank you too for watching. You can see the programme anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.